We've been going through the book of Ephesians and just asking the question, what are some of the ingredients that are involved with building up the body of Christ and making it strong, and using the analogy or the word picture of the human body as a word picture of the church. And so we're going to be looking at that theme of building this morning. However, we're not going to look at it from an organic perspective. We're going to look at it from a construction point of view, because there are other ways that the church is built, and the apostle uses different images, different analogies to help us imagine what God's doing. So as we begin, let me ask you a question. When you think of the church and what the church ought to be like, if you were to compare it to a neighborhood, what would you expect it to resemble? Would it be more like some of the more established, mature neighborhoods here in town, where you've got 30-foot, 40-foot oak trees, and you've got these manicured, landscaped lawns with all sorts of flowers and new roofs and leaded windows and everything? Is that what the church is like? Or is it really is it like these new platted areas out on the east side of town or northwest Norman, where they've just cleared the ground and they've got for sale signs and a realtor's address? And maybe there's a concrete mixer out there and they're starting to pour a foundation and a pile of 2x4s and some PVC pipe. When it rains, instead of grass, they've got gullies. Which of those two pictures describes the church? Well, I'm going to suggest the church is still under construction. And we're going to see a passage this morning that, frankly, I think some of these areas where it's just framed and there's pieces of plywood laying around and all sorts of debris may be a better picture of the church right now than Brookhaven is. So what we're going to look at is what Jesus has been imagining the church would be and what he's doing to get it there. When Jesus prayed in Gethsemane, prior to his crucifixion, he prayed for the 11 remaining faithful disciples. And here's what he prayed. I do not ask in behalf of these alone, meaning those 11 men. He said, but for those who believe in me through their word. Now he's talking about the church now. He's praying for you and me. That they may all be what? One. The passion of our Savior is that we might all be one. Then he describes that. Even as you, Father, and me, and I am in you, that they may be in us. And here's why. So the world may believe that Jesus Christ was sent and that he was the Son of God. Now that was his desire. We'll use that to introduce our passage in Ephesians chapter 2. We're going to begin with verse 19 and complete the chapter in verse 22 this morning. And in this passage, Paul gives us three descriptions of the church. The first two have already been completed. They're positional truths. We experience those things. They're already finished. We simply live them out. But the third one is an ongoing process, and that's the one we'll look at this morning. Paul says, first of all, that we are fellow citizens. In other words, we have a place and a privilege. In verse 19, he says, we are consequently, you are no longer foreigners and aliens, but fellow citizens with God's people. In other words, we have a place. We have a privilege. When we become Christians, we're placed into the church. And he says, we are like fellow citizens. Then he goes and takes it a step further in terms of relationship. In the latter half of that verse, he says that we are members of God's household. Now he's not only talking about citizenship, he's talking about family ties. We have a unique relationship with him and with one another. Now that's already been accomplished. That's where we stand. But then he goes on in verses 20 through 22, and he says, "Built on the foundation of the apostles and prophets, with Christ Jesus as the chief cornerstone, in him the whole building is joined together." Or in one translation it says it's fitted. So he's describing the church now not as a body, but as a what? As a building. And he says, here's what he's doing. He's constructing that thing. The master architect, the master designer, the general contractor is putting this thing together. It's still under construction. It goes on to say, it rises or grows to become a holy temple in the Lord, and in him you too are being built together to become a dwelling in which God lives in his Spirit. We who are Christians are the residents of God. We are the residents of God. Now, what are the raw materials he builds this temple out of? Well, he starts with a cornerstone, a chief cornerstone, and that's his son, Jesus Christ. That's where it all begins. Then in the first century, you have the ministry of a group of men called the apostles, and then the New Testament prophets, who laid the foundation for this thing called the church. But now what's he building with? You. You are the raw material for the temple of God. And when as I pondered that, I thought, me? When God's trying to build a temple, what's he look for? He looks for you, and he looks for me. My mind jumped over to what Paul wrote the Corinthians. I tend to identify with what he said to that church. In 1 Corinthians 1, he said, "There are not many wise according to the flesh among you." In other words, you're not all that smart. "There are not many who are mighty, nor many who are noble, but God has chosen the foolish things of the world to shame the wise. And God has chosen the weak things of the world to shame the things that are strong, the base things of the world, and the despised. God has chosen the things that are not, that he might nullify the things that are, that no man should boast before God." When God builds his church, he starts with ordinary people so that all of the glory goes to him. And none of the credit goes to us. So we're the raw material. And the work is still going on. It is not finished yet. And that's why I think that the church looks a lot more like a house that's just been framed, and where there's pieces of sheetrock laying around and half-used cans of paint, rather than a fully done house that's been maintained well for 30 years. Look at the verbs in verses 21 and 22. Paul says, "In whom the whole building is being fitted together," or joined. And then he says, "It is growing into a holy temple in the Lord, in whom you are being built together into the dwelling of God in the Spirit." It is an ongoing process. It's not finished yet, and we shouldn't look at it as something that ought to be perfect. It's under construction. Put your hard hats on. There's a lot of activity going on. What is he building it for? Well, first of all, Paul says, for his holiness. Now, holiness in the Bible is the idea it's set apart for a unique purpose and for a unique person. So we are his for his use only. And as I pondered this, I realized the church is not here for me. The church is here for him. And that when I come to church, or when I participate in church, the primary question that I should be asking is not, what am I getting out of it? I should benefit from it. But the church is not for me. The church is his. And the question I need to be asking is, am I contributing to that? Or do I have that low view that the church had better meet my needs, and if it doesn't, I'm going somewhere else? It is a holy temple, meaning it is set apart for one purpose and one person, and that is Him. And that's what He's building it for. Second of all, it's a place for Him to dwell. In verse 22, it says, we are being built together to become a dwelling in which God lives by His Spirit. The church is where He chooses to reside. That's where He gets His mail. So if we want to experience God, there's a sense in which the Christian pilgrimage is a personal experience. I know God. You can know God. But what Paul is saying is that there is far more to it than my personal walk with God. He doesn't choose to dwell just in me. He tends to dwell among us. And He is relating us together so that He can abide there. I wonder how many times we think about, oh, God was with us this morning. What we're really saying is, I like the music. Nothing wrong with music. It serves us. But He's not saying that He resides in music, or He doesn't reside in organization. He resides among people who love one another. That's where because that's what He is like. He is a God of love, and He enjoys it when His people love one another. He's building us together. This issue of a temple was a very important thing for the Ephesians. When Paul wrote about the temple, I'm sure he was imagining the temple in Jerusalem. But there was also a temple to a pagan goddess in Ephesus. Her name was Artemis. The Roman name was Diana, the goddess of virginity. And the temple for Artemis was one of the wonders of the ancient world. Over 100 marble columns, 4 feet apart. I mean, it was an incredible structure. So for Paul to say, God's taking you Ephesians and He's making a new temple. They were used to glorious temples. But he's saying, essentially, you haven't seen anything yet. I'm going to make that stone thing look like a shack by putting your lives together. And I will dwell there. We'll let old Artemis do her thing. But I'm dwelling among you. Now, if he's knitting us together, building us together, what's that entail? Interesting word. It's only used twice in the New Testament. When it says we're being fit together, it means closely joined or organized compactly. In other words, He likes us to be tight with one another. And that's where He's taking us. The only other time this word is used is later on in this letter when Paul describes a human body. In verse 16 of chapter 4, he says, for whom the whole body being fitted and held together by that which every joint supplies. He's saying God enjoys it when His people are close to one another. And that's what He's in the process of doing. We use a word to describe relationships or the lack of them. And it's become popular over the last few years. It's the word connected. That's exactly what this means. When people describe this church, they either describe it in terms of, oh, I wish we were more connected, or I feel a sense of disconnectedness. Well, that's what he's saying here, that he's in the process of connecting us. Jesus used the word, I'm in the process of making you one. So, he's building a wall, he's building a temple. You know, when we look at these walls, they're individual bricks. But when I look over at that wall, though I see individual bricks, I'm not struck by, oh, that's a nice looking brick there. And isn't that one fascinating? Because I don't focus on individual bricks, I see what? A wall. And that's what he means when he says oneness. I want your lives to so blend, to so harmonize, to so encourage and build up one another that when the world looks at us, they don't just see amazing individuals, they see a temple where God, by His Spirit, resides. The other day I was driving out to the lake, and on Alameda, they're starting a new subdivision out there. Beautiful stone pillars that they're building a fence around this neighborhood. Apparently they can charge more for houses if they build fancy fences. And so they have these stone pillars. They're not made out of brick. They're made out of cut stone. And so here are these masons out there putting this stone veneer up with their little chisels or hammers, knocking the rough edges off. And I thought, that's what he's doing in this church. To fit us together, there's some rough edges he has to knock off of my life and off of your life so that we fit, so we can relate to one another. And there's all sorts of rough edges that have to be knocked off. I've got a few unique ones of my own, and so do you. But I also sense that in this community, there are some major issues that he's going to do if he's going to take people in Norman, Oklahoma, and fit them together. Let me just illustrate it with three of them. There's far more than this. There are three attitudes that dominate this community, and if he doesn't chip it off, we won't fit. The first one is busyness. This is a frantic community. And some people are even suggesting there might be something demonic driving it. I'm not certain. All I know is that when I look at my neighbors, I look at people that are going, going, going all of the time, but their lives aren't connected to people. They're busy, but they're not connected to one another. But frankly, we do the same thing in the church. And if we don't address that in our individual lives, in fact, if we don't address it as a church, we will be very busy and yet very alone, very lonely. Paul says later in this book, in chapter 5, verses 15 and 16, he says, be careful how you walk. Not as unwise men. In other words, not like everybody else in town. But as wise, making the most of your time. Now, when he says make the most of your time, he's not seeing how much more can you cram in an hour, or how many more things can you get done in a day. What he's saying is, how can you take the time that you have and invest it in people and in relationships that last for eternity? Make the most of your time. And that's what the Spirit of God gives us wisdom to do. A couple of questions you may want to ask as you wrestle with this in your own life. Lord, do I really need to be doing this? Is the thing I'm doing right now all that important? Second question you may ask is, Lord, will this matter for eternity? Or am I just busy? As I pondered this, I was reminded of Jesus' analogy of the vine. And when he says he wants to make the vine more fruitful, he doesn't add more to it, he trims more off of it. He says, I prune the vine in John 15. I trim it down. And when I trim it, I prune it, it bears more fruit. So I ask this question to we Americans. Is being busier fitting us together or keeping us apart? There's a second thing. This one's tough to get a handle on. I think we'll all know what I'm talking about here. But it's a part of our mind. And that's individuality and independence. Now there's a wholesome sense about this. This part of the United States would have never been settled and developed if it hadn't have been for those pioneering people. That lady they've got a statue of up in Ponca City. She must have had a streak of this. It's that Marlboro man mentality. That out there on my own, handling life all on my own, I am an individual. Rambo had that attitude. The problem of it, and especially for men, is it keeps us disconnected. We look at life as something I have to do. We talk about my walk with God. But if we use that as our value system, men, listen to me, you will find yourself in your 40s very alone, without the moral and spiritual strength to make it the remainder of your life. You will crumble unless your brothers bear life with you. So I want to challenge this church. Do we think in terms of looking out for me, or are we concerned with us? Are we concerned with the church at what we're getting from the church or what we're giving to the church? The older I get, the more I'm convinced God thinks more in terms of us than He does me. There's a third thing that's going to keep us disconnected, and that's self-protection. Jesus told us something about life in John 12. He said, unless a grain of wheat falls in the ground and dies, it remains by itself how? Alone. Unless it dies, it remains by itself alone. And then Jesus explains this. He says, everyone who loves his life, in other words, he protects his life, he cherishes his life, he looks out for himself. Everyone who does that loses his life. But everyone who hates his life, it's not talking about having a bad self-image. What he's talking about here is hating that tendency of protecting yourself, looking out for yourself. Everyone who hates that approach to life discovers life. Let me illustrate it with something Larry Crabb uses in one of his books on marriage building. He says, life is somewhat like being out on a ledge. And as long as we stay on that ledge, it's safe. Because if we leave the ledge down below, there's the possibility of being rejected. You know, if God, as God, fits us together, there's that nagging fear, they may not like me. And all of you know what rejection feels like. All of us have tasted that. Now, as long as we stay up on the ledge, we're safe. We can attend meetings, we can shake hands, we can even call our meetings fellowship. But at best, it's small talk. It doesn't come anywhere close to what Paul is talking about here, where he's fitting lives together. We just attend meetings and play it safe. And people that do that, and churches that do that, are isolated, they are lonely, they are disconnected, they're shallow, and they are ineffective. There's nothing going on. We don't have the residence of God in its fullest. So how do you get off of that ledge? If we're going to move beyond that safe ledge and relate to people, we've got to learn to trust God to meet our relational needs. To depend on God instead of depending on people. That person discovers what the writer of Hebrews talks about in chapter 4, 15 and 16. He says, we don't have a high priest who cannot sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who has been tempted in all things as we are, yet without sin. In other words, Jesus understands what we're going through. Jesus knows what rejection feels like. Jesus knows what it's like to be abandoned. He understands that. So, here's what we do. We draw near with confidence to Him, to the throne of grace. We go to Him, and it says there, We receive mercy and find grace to help in times of need. Where our God is the one who's meeting our relational needs. Now, my needs may be met through you to some extent. But to the extent that they're not, my Father will see to it that those needs are met if I'll trust Him. And if I'll get off of the ledge and move towards you in relationship. Over time, He fits those people together who are not protecting themselves, but become vulnerable to one another, open to one another. And it may take time. But He'll bring belonging, harmony, acceptance, and effectiveness. 2 or 3 years ago, I made a comment to my wife. I was in the ministry. I was busy. There were people in our home all of the time. Several nights a week, we had our house full of people. And I made this comment to her, "Honey, I've never been this lonely in my life. I've never felt this lonely in my life." And so we started a project of reaching out and making friends. We decided we're going to set aside Friday nights and have somebody over to our house every Friday night. And we did that for week after week after week. And we noticed something. We had a good time on Friday nights. No one ever asked us back. I don't know why. And I don't know that they needed to ask us back. I was conscious of the fact, though, that it isn't as easy as I'd like it to be. Wouldn't you think you could just have some people over and then they'd have you back, and after a while you have these close relationships? So we realized that if we're going to get past this loneliness, we're going to have to find a group. So we started going to a prayer meeting. Half a dozen families would attend the thing. And I chose not to protect myself. I chose to be vulnerable. And one night, I admitted I was lonely. And one dear brother in that group reached out to me and said, "I want to be your friend." And Turner, I will cherish that the rest of my life. Here's a man, he's not my peer, older than me. I don't know that we have that much in common. But he decided he was going to reach back to me and to be my friend. And what's been interesting since then is the sense of connectedness I have with the people in that group. And how God illustrated to me, I've got to get off of the ledge, trust Him, keep at it, and He fits lives together. This message is a difficult one to conclude with a practical do this, 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 and it'll all work out. We're talking about a long-term lifetime process. But there's one thing I am certain God is doing in this congregation, because His Word tells me He's doing it. He is fitting us together. And He's knocking rough edges off. So, as He does that, I want to extend a challenge to this congregation. If you find yourself out on the fringe, or let me describe it this way, if you feel like the relationships you're in are really, they're more like a pile of bricks than they are a wall. I mean, they're together, but they're just a pile. Nothing really holds them. It doesn't build anything. It's just this loose pile of relationships. And you'd like to be fitted with some people. Let me challenge you with something. First of all, get involved. Find some place in this church that you can get involved. But don't kid yourself in thinking that's going to solve it. That's just the starting place. Get involved with a group of people. And do more than attend meetings here. Start to have them over to your house. Do things together. And then be vulnerable. Share the aches and the pains that you face. And run the risk that they may not reciprocate. But you be vulnerable. And hang in there. Persist. keep at it. And see if over the years, God doesn't tightly knit you together with some other people in relationships that endure for decades. He is doing that in this church. This isn't optional. We saw a few weeks ago from the preceding passage, Jesus Christ died on a cross, not only to get us to heaven, but to connect us together here. This is not wishful thinking on his part. It cost him his life. And now he says to us, will we walk with him and let him do whatever he wants to knit us together and make us one?